All right, folks, welcome back to the United We Strike Radio Marathon broadcast. This is our third one of 2011, which is definitely turning out to be an interesting and challenging year. Our hearts go out to the folks in Japan, and hopefully to all of us, we will not be experiencing a nuclear meltdown, but prepare for the worst, hope for the best. And right now, speaking of the worst, I'm bringing in Hal. Oh, wait. Now, Hal, that wasn't the right way to get you, was it? No. Hal knows about some of the most nefarious stuff going on here, and he's going to be joined today by Clint Richardson from the CorporationNation.com. Hal is a host of Behind the Woodshed on Oracle Broadcasting, and he also joins us here every month on our marathons. Hal, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for the introduction and the truth. Is the truth. Fits, I guess I'll have to wear it. Hopefully it's a sandal. I kick it off quick. But no, absolutely. And I would like to quickly, before we move on to the important information that we that Clint Richardson has to tell us, I do want to say we do have apparently that break, breach in the nuclear facility in Japan. And we have to consider that. Consider that the potassium iodide is a help that you can consider getting. If you, those of you that don't understand this, you need to fill your thyroid with iodine so that the radioactive particle of iodine doesn't get a place in your thyroid and cause you trouble. So look on the internet, and there's going to be a don't panic on this thing. And so and the weather pattern is such that it's not coming right over to the west coast of the United States of America. So don't let your intelligence guide. Don't let your emotions run. But yes, thank you, Karen. And Clint, thank you again for returning to the marathon and discussing this. I think the CAFR is an absolute – what you've done on your Corporation Nation was absolutely easy to understand. I heard William Roberts talking about the same thing. He's heard William Burian talk for 12 years or so about this, and you brought it all the time. He'd heard Walter. He just couldn't quite get it. But your video, Corporation Nation, absolutely made it so he could understand it and actually use it. So I appreciate, again, as I said last time, that you would have done that. Today, I'd like to continue from the last month's discussion where we kind of dropped off on using the prisons and such like that, using people getting entangled up with the judicial system. As we heard last hour with Joe Bannister and Charles Irwin about this corruption that sits underneath the system. And it's all a financial construct, amazingly, that you can't go into a courtroom and you can't really expect that justice will be done when – the whole system, it's a criminal justice prison system. It's an enterprise that ends up coming up underneath CAFRs, under public and private partnershiping. Welcome again, and we should pick up right there and move on and explain to people, because I think this is an important thing to understand about how to don't comply and ask why and find out what the heck's really going on behind the scenes, that everyone's being – their property's being stolen, they're being oppressed by the system and – agencies like the IRS and having their property taken, and them all being beaten down to being put into another enterprise system.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know what we're really talking about. I mean, when it comes down to what this, if you really want to put a phrase to what this is, it is a conflict of interest. And if you understand that, if you understand that the very government that regulates the prison industry also owns stock and decides what's going to happen within the prison industry. And then each prisoner has what's called a CUSIP number, C-U-S-I-P. You can look that up. It's a securities and exchange term. And every time there's a prisoner, including yourself, you get that CUSIP number attached. That CUSIP number is then bundled as a security. Just like mortgage-backed securities, these are prisoner-backed securities. So what you'll find if you go – I mean, all you have to do really is go sit in a justice court. The word justice court obviously nowadays doesn't really fit together. But you can watch and you can see how much these judges are fining people. First of all, it's you know, obviously a ridiculous amount of money for, say, parking tickets or speeding. Second of all, they're going to attach – a lot of these people are going to get probation. Now, probation, there's not really much difference between going to jail and getting on probation. You're just in jail in your house, even if it's unsupervised probation. You're still attached to this CUSIP number, and that number is again traded on the stock market, and governments are investing in these types of bundled securities. And it's a profitable business. There's a very good reason that Dick Cheney is well invested in the private prison business, as with the government. It is a racket that you might call the slavery industry, because truly the prison industry is indentured servitude. So it's a frightening thing. And again, it goes back to a conflict of interest where the government is having controlling shares of these corporations, and these private prisons obviously are private corporations that are being essentially leased out by the government. So you can't expect the government to do anything about this, because that would go against the interest of themselves, which is the shareholder. So I mean, it's a conflict of interest is the most important thing to understand. You can take that with, why isn't the BP oil spill being cleaned up? Well, I can look at the CAFRs and I can pull up the state holdings report look at some of these pension funds, and I can see that they're heavily invested in BP. You know, why is Monsanto allowed to do what it does? Well, they're heavily invested in Monsanto. Everything that's happening is a complete conflict of interest, because the very people that are regulating these industries also own majority controlling share in the company. So that's what's happening with prisons too.
That's right. And we left last month, for those of the listeners that are with us from last month, and we left with the QSIP number and how that kind of attaches at your account number and how they do the accounting for all this. And it's, we're finding out that it isn't just, as you've heard in some of the words, it's not justice. It's actually just us, or just U.S. And it's not, and they throw two more words together when they call it criminal justice. I've never figured out how that can be. How can it be criminal justice unless they're telling us something? So there's lots of stuff in our face. The words are right there to let us know if we get out of the propaganda that they tell us about things. But I think you're right. It's conflict of interest. We run into this all the time, and then you find out, as you found when you did your research, that all of these. Any enterprise that is a corporation that can have an investment pool put in, investment put on it, can actually be put on the market and is put on the market, and it all becomes part of the financing construct that the United States as a corporation, as it deals with itself as a business, that it ties all these things in and goes through Wall Street together. And that's what I was telling you. I appreciated what your disclosure was on your video that explained that all the instrumentalities of the government are invested in the Wall Street, which means that they just trade amongst themselves, which can then in turn and explain to me how the market that you need, the average of the businesses, the value that are going on, is really just propped up by the system investing in itself. It's just moving paper around. So it's the truth. The so-called currency is really just paper in motion, necessarily substance, and really doesn't indicate anything valuable. So what they've done is they've gotten us looking at, like, that issue is really real. What we should be doing is looking at minting is really more of a better thing for people's law, because that's where the specie is. You know, they've got us into a paper, fiat paper world, and we don't understand it. I mean, we've never seen bondings. We don't know why they bond us. You don't know why you get to bond out. You don't understand what probation actually is. As you mentioned, it's actually just a continuing leash of which they can actually get double. Essentially, it's a double damage on you if you violate what they now have brought in to be a contract. Have you done any investigation about these things and how people might work to avoid this contract? Within the QSIP construction, is there a way to ask about that to find out that it exists? Because I know there's laws. I already know that there's laws that say an attorney or a pro se plaintiff can ask what their interest return is on those investments.
Sure, sure. And the QSIP, you will get assigned that QSIP if you go to court and are, again, considered a prisoner or are convicted of anything, and you either go on probation or actually go to prison. You will be assigned that QSIP number. It's very easy to get that number once it's assigned to you. As far as I know, it's actually the number that's on the back of your Social Security card, not the front, but the back of your Social Security card. Which is, as far as I understand, is also the number that's the serial number on a dollar bill. that every dollar out there that's circulated actually has someone's social back, the number that's on the back of their social security card as the serial number for that dollar, because the dollar in 1933, under U.S. code, they made it so that people are actually the foundation of the backing of the dollar. It's not that the dollar is really worthless per se. It's backed by us. We are the collateral for the good faith and credit of the United States. So it's basically taking that number, which is your – I mean, you can – if everybody's familiar with the straw man theory and all that, it's basically your straw man or your corporate veil that they're using and trading it. And really it's the trade of your labor. You'll be assigned community service. You'll do work in jail. It'll be sold by the government through its large companies. I think Unicor is one of them. Can't remember, but it's you can ask for it. If you're ever in court and you're going through this type of procedure, you can ask for your CUSIP number. I believe that the real way to fight this, and I am working with a couple people locally here in Utah, is that you have to fight this from second one. The second that you interact with police, you must ensure that you get their post number, which is basically their bond number. You must get who their bonding agent is. You must ask all of this information. When the police officer reads you your Miranda so-called rights, you must say that you do not understand these rights as they're read to you. Because one of those rights is that they can use anything and everything that you say against you. That's not a right. That's more like a threat. So the word understand needs to be taken apart and acknowledged for what it means. It means that you stand under the authority of that corporate code enforcement officer. He's not a police officer or a policeman. He's a code enforcer. So the real trick is to start learning not only code, but how to bypass code in a way that you are never entering into an actual contractual agreement that'll get you in trouble. And that's where the difficult part is, and that's what I've been working on with due diligence here lately, trying to understand all of this. And it's not easy, I'll tell you, because the U.S. Code is about 157 feet long in about 35 volumes. So it's pretty difficult.
Right, and what you're going to find out is that you're starting to deal in actually court process more than the law and bringing forth the requirement. When you're finding out that you need to do all this up front in your very first interactions with the with some law enforcer, and the word enforce is kind of funny. Why would they be forcing us if it was a peaceful society to begin with?
Yeah.
But what you're looking at is you'll find out as you, if you ever get into court, if you don't get all this stuff discussed with the law enforcer at the moment that you're talking with him, it cannot later be brought into court. So you find that your methodologies are that you bring certain laws and then you bring certain questions, because those what you try to do then, if they're denied to you then, you can bring up in court as of the process, which essentially, if you know what you're asking for, like you are doing here, you're doing two things: is you're showing they didn't have a jurisdiction at the time, and you're showing that they have a culpability through this commercial access. So you're learning how to set all that up. I'm suggesting continue following that, because that's one of the only ways you're going to start protecting yourself.
Right, and what I've also found is that if you want to, this is weird, and when you think of it, it makes very much sense, because these courts are literally private corporations. These judges are leasing out their courts to the local municipality, and it's just a big mess. And they're making a lot of money, and they get a percentage of that CUSIP earnings, those bundled securities, those prisoner-backed securities. But what I've also found is that the only way that you can actually introduce common law, or common law is case law. In other words, previous decisions that might benefit you. Yeah. So the only way to actually introduce that type of law and actually have the court or the judge, who's just an attorney in a black robe, the only way to actually introduce that into court and have it benefit you is for you to introduce it yourself. If you never put the law into the court does not have to acknowledge that case law. So if you want common law or case law on your side, you better do it yourself. And I wouldn't, count on an attorney, because the attorney is not really interested in seeing justice per se. He's interested in making sure, he works for the court, not for you. And he is there to make sure that the court does not do anything to harm itself. In other words, he's there to make sure that the court stays within its procedure.
It's an officer of that court.
Exactly. So he's not an officer of you. He's not there to help you.
We're back to the term that you brought up. That's a conflict of interest. It's an invisible thing that most people don't understand. Listeners, folks, you'll hear this. You'll look and see in this system, this legal system, as Charles Irwin talked probably last hour, that legal is this fictional system. You're going to find a conflict of interest. It's everywhere, because it's okay in a legal system to ignore a crime that would be occurring to you and me.
Legal has nothing to do with law. In fact, you could consider that legality is the straw man of law.
In one regard, except that it is defined as fiction, and it also is essentially why we're in what they call equity courts. And you'll find out that equity exists in the absence of law. These are basic definitions that people can find, and that tells you if you're an equity court, you're in a court that is in the absence of law. And it's fascinating. They tell you what you're into, and we'd think it's different. This is made up. This is judge-made law, and you're right about bringing the law. And I was going to to get too far path. I told you last month that I do a lot of mining law, and I do a lot of research. And we are asserting a grant that was generated for every American citizen to obtain the mineral estate that was granted in 1866.
Good for you.
And in this issue, you find out exactly what you just said. We find just the opposite, where what we have to do, not just the opposite, but more the fact of bringing the law. What we're doing actually is, I tell everybody, and this is now starting to be practice, the law that we bring is actually the title to the property that we possess. In this case, it's our mining claim notice. And that acts as a patent against every other interest. And that's the law. That becomes the law right there. The law is the land in a patent issue. The land, whoever has authority and jurisdiction over that evidence, the ultimate evidence, which is the patent, brings the law into the court, and those equity courts can't actually deal with them because there's no law that.
Is this the same as what's called a land patent?
In a mining notice, and just without getting, I don't want to get too far, but this is absolutely right on with the CAFRs, because it's actually showing you in mining law is the land, is the wealth. You're actually looking at nothing fiat. It's actually the soil. It's the value. So what you have in a mining claim notice, it acts as the notice of your title. It works as patent. It's not patent, and the only difference is it would be a patent if there wasn't the yearly requirements to maintain the claim, which is your $100 or so of work. Otherwise, it has all the rights and power and authority that a patent would. And the patent in the United States, I hear a lot of people using the term allodial title and allodium. Actually, not a lot of people use allodium. That's the more proper view. But in the United States, they only see fee simple absolute. But the evidence, which you're talking in a court of law, and the ultimate evidence of title possession and authority and jurisdiction over a land is the patent. It prevails against everything else, period. And so this becomes where we start to see, I push on the property side. The CAFRs are all on the on the paper fiat equity side. So we walk into a court and we assert this. We're learning how to do this now as I'm teaching people as we move through the cases. It's very difficult. It takes a lot of time. Like you said, your learning curve is very steep. We're asserting this title, and it's absolutely stymieing the legal system. They don't even understand it, but we've been told this. This is not conjecture. What I tell you is I'm being told. We have so-called law officers that cannot comprehend this because the lawyers that they go to don't understand it. It explains this complete, the justice system wasn't for the people. It was for them. And this is how we walk in with the law, with the land, with the actual evidence. And in this case, the evidence is the law. It's the prior grant. It's an obligation. It's not something you're asking to be imparted. There's no opinion for them here. It absolutely destroys their authority. And this is how what you're starting to do when you start questioning the authority of the cop when you first talk to him, you're identifying he's a commercial entity enforcing commercial things, and you're going to eventually come in and show you're not that thing underneath his jurisdiction.
Yeah,
the problem is we don't have title to ourselves, so that can be figured out. What I'm saying is that when I got into the mining law, it sure made the bright line about everything that you're talking about and how what you're saying is exactly what you need to continue following. I guess I want to encourage you to learn these very instrumental things, the very most basic things, and you can't look at the attorneys because they absolutely are clueless on what's going on.
Yeah, it's funny. They only know legality. They don't know law, which is just a strange concept for most people to even comprehend. You know, I have a friend, by the way, this might help or hinder, I don't know, but he's actually found the U.S. code that allows people to separate from the corporation, the United States corporation. It actually tells you how to do it in U.S. code, and I don't have it with me, but I will definitely pass it on. But he also is saying that since the United States, since Washington, D.C., the technical federal government, cannot actually own land under constitutional authority.
That's right.
That all of these federal lands, he's actually going to go into a state park or somewhere and stake a claim on federal land, which I thought was a beautiful thing. He says, I'm going to go there. I'm going to find the most beautiful spot, and I'm going to stake my claim there. And that's where I'm going to build my house. And, I'm going to stick to it until I get,
I would caution him to learn a little bit more about what they're doing there, but on the first statement, you're right. The government's only a trustee, and it had the power in the Constitution to dispose, not hold. Because you're looking at an agenda that's come on and said that they know where the wealth is, and they know that settled land is what keeps your country together, so they're interrupting that. I'm going to ask you to caution your friend to not go the way he's saying that. If you learn the terms a little bit better, if he's talking about a federal land, it means there's a surface entry over the top of it, and he may be actually trespassing. So be very careful. We're talking about the most substantial and substantive law that America can provide, and you don't want to violate that. So, not to say that there is no actual possession in the government is absolutely the fact that he can go to a park. I'm not so sure that I would dare it.
Let's put it this way. The federal government, all these executive departments, which is state parks and national parks included, all require the consent of the government. That is written also in U.S. code. So technically, I mean, I would like to go up to one of these guys that are charging $80 to get into a national park and say, well, I don't consent to that. This is state land that the federal government is holding within its Bureau of Land Management. I don't consent to the fact that I have to pay to go on my own land and pretty much see what happens. That's the kind of thing that I think people need to start actually saying, well, here's the law. It says that the federal government requires consent.
Let me interrupt that, because this is exactly what this mining law does for you. In other words, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. I'm just finding a law that exists that allows you to do that. Because in the mineral grant, there's also the grant to access. It's free and open access. And I tell people, just put a pan on your backside. Just walk in like you're a miner. They can't charge you. And it's right there printed. You don't have to invent anything, and you don't have to test anything. What you'll walk up against is a bureaucracy and an agency that will not recognize this. But that's a whole other problem, and that's what we deal with on a daily basis on many, many issues with minors and their rights. Essentially, not. I focus. It ends up going to highways. It ends up going to water rights, and those two things right off the bat should show you how big this is, since those are the first things that are in the government's eye. They want to take the water and they want to control your travel. So anyway, I don't want to get too far afield. That's a whole other thing we could discuss.
That is.
You're absolutely right. I'm with you. I want to encourage it, but be very careful how you execute it. And please contact me and any listeners that want to know more. MarkOnTheBeast@yahoo.com. MarkOnTheBeast@yahoo.com, and we can get in contact about all these things. I'm asking you to push forward because this is where we are now. We have I have a very clear understanding underneath the mining law how those lands are our lands, how the government is only a groundskeeper, and how they've trespassed over and taken what was ours. And what we've done is we've given it up. We have to stop giving up our power and our authority. It's either our soil or it's not. And we can allow someone to come and take it. And this is kind of what they've done, though. They've taken it out of the soil and brought it into the fiat equity system of paper. And now we've seen a topsy-turvy throwing off of the principle of land and how to keep track of it, as we saw in all the foreclosures. And I want to get it back now. You wrote an article, changing directions here. I didn't really want to get too much into the mining law, though. You're absolutely – we could actually go on there, and there's a lot to learn there for people that is very powerful. But we're seeing some stuff. You wrote an article about this Wisconsin issue going on with the unions. And we were talking about CAFRs. And I want to get us back into how this equity system starts to throw everything on its head. Again, there's no law. There's no basis. It's what they make up as they go. The article that you wrote, you went through and you showed in this Wisconsin and the unions, the unions that are going on over there, that they didn't necessarily need to – they can't actually claim the state of Wisconsin – whether or not you agree with the union position, the state can't actually claim that they don't have money to fund whatever it is that the people were entitled to. Is that? Can you explain some of that?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, but what we're talking about, again, is that comprehensive annual financial report. It is the total financial statement of government. What you see, of course, as a taxpayer is just the budget report, which only shows very, very few things, tax in, tax out. Doesn't it show the accrual of wealth that the government has been investing in over the last however many years? Some of these things have been around 100 years. So basically what I did was just go in, and in the report, it lists all of its funds. It even explains what these funds are used for. Generally, they're construction funds, they're university funds, so the state owns the university, which then has a humongous fund that it invests in. And all of these are liquid investments. In other words, they are invested in stocks, in real estate, so that means the apartment building across from the street from you might be owned by government, the block of housing might be owned by government, malls, movie theaters, everything you can think of. If you actually pull the state holdings report, you can't necessarily see what they own on the actual CAFR because they don't list them out individually. They just give totals. But if you actually go in and request the holdings report, it can be called different things, it'll give a list of everything that's owned. Now, I put that in the documentary, the first documentary. I used the Florida state holdings list, and it showed all of the stock investments that the state of Florida had. And it was every major corporation you could think of and all the minor ones. So international and national. Now, here's what I really want to talk about when it comes to especially state governments, because all state governments have massive, massive, massive amounts of money invested in pension funds. Now, this relates heavily to what's happening in Wisconsin, but what people don't understand, and I've kind of come to realize this myself after looking at all these reports, and this is what I'm covering in part two of the Corporation Nation. These pension funds are used by government to funnel taxpayer money into. So when the employees, I mean, I'm sure that a lot of people out there have been in some sort of 401k or other type of pension plan, even an insurance plan, it's the same thing. It's a way to redirect taxpayer money into the fund. So the the employees will actually contribute sometimes by law. In other words, they're forced to contribute to their retirement fund. That's the way the government insures money into this fund. But then also the government, the office that employee works for, which is generally referred to on the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report as the employer, also either matches or adds a significant amount of money on behalf of the employee into the fund. Now, we have to realize that all the money that is a government office, the employer, is always funded by taxpayer money. This means that everything that the government as the employer is matching and contributing on top of what the employer puts in there is taxpayer money. So we're talking about billions upon billions, probably in the trillions if you consider all the pension funds together, of money that is going into the pension fund system that is taxpayer money. Some pension funds are not even contributory. In other words, like some of the judge funds, of course it's judges, are non-contributory, meaning that it's only the taxpayer money that is going into the fund to fund the contributions. So what's happening is actually quite frightening, because the pension fund system is used literally to funnel so much taxpayer money into the pension funds so that they can invest that money. And the end game...
What's the difference between that and money laundering?
Well, that's the question. I mean, and the real question is...
That's a legitimate question. I just want to – that's a legitimate question, because I don't know. It sounds like what you're talking about, this is money laundering.
Well, it is. I mean, it's just lawful, or I should say legal.
Oh, it's legal. I got – thank you. Yes. Okay. Now okay. I got – now I got you. Okay. Yeah. Excuse me.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how that works? Something that is legal is not necessarily lawful. What it is, yeah, is not in the interest at all in any way of the taxpayers. And that's what's important, because all of our taxpayer money that could be going to something else is going into pension funds, which, again, this is not helping the employees either. This is the massive amounts of, the one we're talking about specifically here is the Wisconsin. They have almost $67 billion worth of pension funds in that state. None of that money has anything to do with the employees. The employees were already paid. So this is the total after all benefits were paid, okay, for 2010. So, I mean, we're talking about some massive, massive amounts of money. And as I said in the thing, that's over $21,000 per person when you add up all of these funds, because the total in fund investments that I found on the CAFR was about $89 billion worth of stocks and other investments. So that's not including buildings and other assets that aren't liquid, but these are just the stock investments, the real estate investments, the mutual fund and other types of funds, the prisoner-backed securities, the mortgage-backed securities, the derivatives, all of these things that these governments have invested in within these funds. So, yeah, it is money. It's money laundering, again, legally, because, again, conflict of interest, they're setting their own laws. It's ridiculous, really.
The government has just got its hand out for its own self.
Yeah, what you're talking about is Russia, who we say was this, you know, horrible, horrible red hand, the communist, they actually have now emulated the American system, because they're like, wow, you guys know how to steal money from your people, and they aren't even looking. They don't even know the money exists in the first place. Obviously, the people in the unions, who are the ones that are getting all these benefits taken away from them, they don't even know that this money exists. Half of them probably don't even know how much is in their pension fund system. They don't even know that taxpayers are contributing. They don't know that they're getting double tapped. In other words, they're not only contributing to the system, but their taxpayer dollars are also going to the system. This is crazy.
Right. Well, and then it's all made up. I mean, there's just nothing weighed and measure about any of this stuff. So, but can you put in a nutshell? And I don't even know how to split this, because I look at a lot of the politics and I just see it's a big, big stroke on everybody anyway. So I kind of dismiss a lot of this on that level. But and then you see the corruption of the CAFR and the actual value, as you say, the accrual value, all these investments that don't have to be listed to cover itself for this year are lost to history. No one knows where they seem to be going. They're mentioned right in the CAFRs to say that they're not going to be listed. So this accrual is going on top of it all, that I wonder what's going on with that booking. But with regards to the – and I guess I may be answering my own question – with regards to the lie of the CAFR and the promotion of the union destruction, if I understand the Wisconsin issue correctly, and the fact that the other lie that they say they can't pay for it, that's why they want to go after the unions. What's the – have you analyzed this for the – since CAFR actually pays for all this, What's the actual bottom line in Wisconsin, ultimately? And I don't even know if it's about focusing your mind. Is it a politics and control? It's certainly not. It's exposing the CAFR. And then the question is, what about presenting the CAFR as an answer? And then does that undo something that may be needing to be undone? Because I can tell you, I'm not necessarily a fan of unions either. I've seen their good parts, but even the miners in the 20s, they had finally had the coal wars, created unions, which in 10 years were absolutely made into criminal syndicates to subvert the rights of the miner and to make money. So what have you done an analysis of what's the give and take on this? Is CAFR a part of it? Is it separate? And what's the government of Wisconsin actually doing behind all this?
Well, I mean, again, you have to wonder what the end game of all of this is. What's the purpose of building these humongous funds, and what's the, you know, personally, now I don't have anything to back this up, but personally, I mean, we've all heard Obama talking about tapping into the pension fund system. We've all heard lots of things, and there's absolutely no protectionary clauses or laws that says that can't happen. So personally, it's hard to say because there's two aspects of this. One is obviously the value. In other words, we know that they have money, but it's generally invested in these investment funds. However, the real value of those funds is the investments themselves, because collectively over the United States, all of the, you know, thousands and thousands of governments and hundreds of pension funds, you're talking about, again, a complete portfolio of ownership in all of these corporations. So you have to think of the value of these funds not in monetary issues, but in ownership issues, because it doesn't matter what happens to the dollar. The government has stock. Stock is not necessarily going to be based on a dollar. It's going to be based on whatever replaces the dollar. It's going to be based on, you know, if it's special drawing rights that come about. Okay, we're talking about something that's almost beyond comprehension here, because again, the value of these stocks and investments and real estate too is the literal ownership in the company, and that doesn't necessarily reflect the value of the dollar. The dollar can go up as much as it wants or down as much as it wants. They still have that ownership in the company. So that's what's scary to me, is that, one, that ownership cycle we just talked about. Two, the fact that these things can be taken over by the federal government and whoever stands over the federal government at any time. Literally, the president of the United States, because he was given you understand that the Constitution was suspended in 1933 under the emergency powers, you know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt pretty much took all, you know, power into the executive office, which is why all of these executive orders and presidential directives have power. So if he
let me interject just for a moment. I understand that's one of the other studies we could do. And I just say it this way, because there's a lot of departures from what we might think is constitutional law. I say my answer to that is if you aren't enjoying a constitution, you probably don't have one.
Yeah, well, if you try to use the Constitution as a defense in court, they're going to say you can't do that.
Because it's equity, isn't it?
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
No law
there. Exactly. Yeah. Again, it's that corporate veil that's been put over the Constitution of the United States, and that corporate veil is the corporation of the United States. It's basic, you know, straw man theory. But what we're saying though is what the frightening part about this is, that these funds can be taken at any time. A state can simply say, like it's saying now, it's saying it's broke. They can say, well, we're going to declare bankruptcy, and you know what? There's not going to be anybody out there to say no, because who's making the laws on bankruptcy? The very person that's going to stand to benefit from the liquidation or the takeover of these funds. You see the conflict of interest even here. It's
well, the too big to fail got a bunch of ledger entries, and everybody else is sucking wind.
Yeah, that's exactly. Well, you know, you could probably put the pension fund system into that too big to fail. Although there's absolutely no truth to the statements that these things are underfunded. When they say they're underfunded, what we're talking about is two different accounting systems. One is the actual money that's in the fund, which is what's on the CAFR, and then they also list the actuarial projections, meaning what that fund is going to be in, say, 10 years, 20 years. And so you can change the interest rate that they say that you're going to have to earn, each employee is going to have to earn on their investment, and come up with a figure that shows that these pension funds are going to go bankrupt because you're raising that, or excuse me, lowering that amount of return on investment. And it'll show that the pension fund is going to fail. But it's not true, because the actual value of the fund, as you can see if you look up the pension fund CAFRs, you can see that they've grown by leaps and bounds over the last however many years that they've been in business, these corporate structures.
You went in a transition, before we get too far from it, you went into a transition of temporal thought about money when you say how something would be funded. But in fact, they don't use the word money. They actually don't. I don't think I've ever seen it. They use the word monies if they try to get close. But you're absolutely right. They use the word fund, and then you qualified it by saying that fund. And so this is not even a monetary system. It's this fiat currency system. It's right. A fiscal system. And so this is all funding, not money. They can, yeah, and there's fiction, so they could make it up as they go.
I want to be clear, though, that, you know, a fiat currency system is not just inherently evil. It's kind of like guns. Guns are not inherently evil. That's ridiculous. People make guns dangerous. Guns in the wrong hands. Well, the same thing with a fiat currency. If you put the fiat currency in the hands of a bank, obviously a bank is based on usury. That is going to be a very bad situation. You know, Lincoln tried to do the greenback, had no interest, or in this, you know, you could define interest as usury. And so a fiat currency is not necessarily a bad thing. Anything that's based on gold is essentially, unless you're trading the actual gold, it's going to be fiat in the same way. It's a very
Well, I guess I meant to use fiat, and I didn't mean it in a negative connotation. I meant fiat in that if you're looking at a constitutional construct, it's fiat compared to the constitutional construct of weight and measure as defined by the Constitution. So it can be okay, and you're right. I mean, people can take it and run with it. I want to touch base, though, with this. As we were talking about, you went to gold, and that it could still be – all that system could still be adulterated. In the context of the Constitution, though, remember last month you had a question. It came to me – the answer came from a colleague host on OracleBroadcasting.com where I broadcast, and he had the answer right after our broadcast. He said if we looked very carefully at what you had made the definition for the assets that the Fed has and they documented at $42 an ounce, it was actually the word dollar was in there. And his observation was, if you take the value of the constitutional dollar, apply that as the unit, since the dollar is a unit, not it's just an inner unit, but that means something. You can go and find out what it means as relates to the Constitution. It meant that you had to bring the value of silver into the equation. So it was actually 42 times $30 an ounce. And that brought us up to $1,200 an ounce. So instead of the 42, it was $42. So that it wasn't just $42 as we think about dollars. It was actually tied to the constitutional connection. So the Fed's actually basing their fiat currency on a constitutional premise. So. I thought that was kind of fascinating, and it did answer somewhat. It gets us right up to where the price of silver was at the time. It's a few hundred dollars less an ounce, but the point was we got in the ballpark. So here we have again in the context of a constitutional currency, I mean a specie, we have this fiat currency that has lost its way. It has no weighted measure, and it is in equity. It can be made up to do anything. And so here we are. We have no objective basis to rely on. At one level, the CAFR as I told you last month, I'm absolutely blown away at the potential for this to work actually as a fiat currency. We can get away from some of this stuff and never be in want. But like you said, we got these people that are in there doing the conflict of interest. We brought us into the conversation. There's a conflict of interest that we have no accountability to stop. No different than we have apparently no protectionary clause that we shall enjoy a qualified president.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, is that we don't have law on our side. You know, in order for people to have law on their side, they'll have to create the law themselves, vote it in, do all the stuff they need to do, all the campaigning and everything. But, you know, Walter's tax retirement system is based on the fact that globalization has already happened. Everybody's afraid of globalization. But it's happened long ago. And the real basis of globalization truly are these funds, these pension funds and other government investments, because the system allows for construct. This pension fund system is in every state, every country across, you know, major first world country anyway. And they're all invested in each other's companies, and it's allowed. And that is globalization, because all the companies that are in China that are importing goods to America, well, those are American companies that have relocated to China, and the Chinese government is allowing them to pollute the heck out of the air and the water and steal the water rights and do all these things. Meanwhile, we're back here thinking, wow, we did good. We got rid of some of the pollution and our water's cleaner and da 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 da. No, we just exported it to China because our government and their government are cooperating in this globalization of investments into everything, if that makes sense. So,
as well as we exported slavery, and as well as we then find out that in that corporate governance construct, the fiscal construct, we don't have law. We have corporate law. We have corporate statutes. So go ahead.
Walter, his whole basis for trying to start these types of funds, these tax retirement funds, one is to make all of this transparent, obviously, so that the people can actually see what's happening. But also, based on the fact that this has already happened, these funds are built on the ownership of every corporation out there. So it's already done. The biggest concern with people is when they hear about Walter's ideas that, oh, well, that will mean that government has controlling shares in companies. And you look at them and you're like, but that already happened. That happened long ago. That's why all this pain is happening with all the people. So he just wants to take it and get it under control and have the beneficiary of that fund, instead of the pension funds, which are going to benefit somebody other than the people or the employees, as well as all these other funds that are within government.
Or the market itself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you think about it, let's face it, the stock market, I believe, after doing all this research, the stock market really wasn't built for the people to do trading. The stock market was built for the government to it's a fallacy to think that the stock market is for the people to you know, they allow us, because, you know, the more free the slaves believe they are, the less they're going to revolt. So they allow us to invest in Microsoft and all these corporations. But rest assured, you know, institutional investments, which are government investments and mutual funds, are the owners of all these stocks. So Walter just wants to take that and say, hey, the beneficiary of that should not be these attorneys, lawyers, judges, and politicians, and bankers. It should be the people.
Yes.
The people, right. the people. Can't say that enough.
Okay, now, exactly. And this is what got me excited about looking at it. You can actually invest in your own infrastructure, create bond wraps on it, make double the amount of money, and have lots of currency for people to pass around. There's no excuse. But that's why I want to get back to your Wisconsin discussion. And I have to thank you again on doing that, because I don't have the time to lay that stuff out. So I appreciate that you did it, so I can, even though it's not in a state that I'm in, I can see how it lays out. But that's how I'm getting back to this question. It would seem that even under the CAFR system, if they allowed the payment of these financing, if you will, of the funds to the unions, they could actually take that as another monetary asset that they're actually investing in, guarantee those, actually increase their assets. And so that's why, back to the question, so what is the real why wouldn't they do that to actually fabricate an increased asset? Why are they fighting this? What might be that answer, that view? I'm confused as to why they just don't embrace all this stuff as the government.
Yeah, well, I think that if they embraced it, it would mean they would have to be a lot more transparent. And I think if transparency were to ever really happen, you would see criminal activity that you couldn't even possibly dream existed. And you know, we see a little bit of it, I think, in the CAFRs, but I don't think CAFRs are at all a.
I'm thinking of the accrual stuff. The accrual has been stuffed underneath the carpet. No one sees that. If we found out what was back there, we'd probably start hanging people for all the woe that's been put on people and the suffering.
Well, yeah. I mean, you do see some of the reports. If you look back far enough, you'll see the discrepancies where, well, wait a minute, what happened to all this money? You know, but
right,
yeah, it's a very difficult thing, because what they're doing, I mean, you got to keep in mind that these funds are being bonded. They're loaning, right. Pension funds are making loans.
That's right.
You know, some of their business is making loans to the very people who are funding the pension funds. Governments are doing it as well. When a government makes a bond in your local area, you as a taxpayer should really go and find out, well, hey, wait, what's backing that bond? Because you know what? It turns out that a lot of bonds are actually backed by housing. Because no one is really the owner of their property. They own the property through the state or the federal government. And it turns out that bonds are actually backed as far as collateral by your home. If something's being built in your neighborhood or some, you know, re-beautification project is going on and they floated a bond, half the time they do it against people's homes without them even knowing it.
They actually do it. They're actually doing it through the problem that we don't understand about property that I was talking to you before. People don't understand. They need to accept the patent that was issued on the land that they purchased. Instead, they drop it into the deed system and record it. That becomes a real property in the state, which is taxable, and that also then is what they create the accounts for. So this is an ignorance on the part of the people that, again, this mining law really kind of brings out, and that's why the government, you just kind of explained why the government will fight tooth and nail to keep these properties on the tax rolls, because they are using the less than fee simple absolute status. They're actually real property is defined as a land held less than fee. That's what your property tax is on. So people need to think about that. But here, as we're coming to the end of the hour, we got probably just a few more minutes. I wanted to touch base. Are you going to be available for next month on the Grand Marathon of April 15th?
Absolutely, I can talk about this stuff till I'm blue in the face.
Well, I'm not sure that's up to. I'm sure you'll be back. I'm just wanted. I don't know what Karen. We hadn't talked about this. I understand, folks, listeners. There's a April 15th of next month. It's a grand marathon of 3 days. Please tune in to this. Get involved. Clint, I didn't know how to cleanly get people to this Wisconsin article. Do you have a clean way that the listeners can get to your article on the internet? Because I think you lay it out real nice, and they can kind of quickly see what the Wisconsin budget is. And it shows the big dog and pony show that Wisconsin's going, that this state in Wisconsin is.
Well, understand that this is every state, it is every city, it is every county. Yeah. All municipalities, all school districts have money. I mean, it's the whole thing. I've actually done, since I did that, I did two other posts as well, and I called them CAFR School. So definitely check this out. One is a city in Colorado, and the other is the state of Minnesota, which I also tore down and found about 60-something billion dollars in fund balances. So if you go to my blog, it is Reality Blogger. So it's the word Reality Blogger with one G, B-L-O-G-E-R. And it's .wordpress.com. And, you know, if you search for Wisconsin's real financial situation explained, you'll definitely find the article because it's it made its way around. I'll tell you, people are actually sending it to people like Michael Moore, and they're CCing me on the email. They're sending it to all these radio stations, all these TV stations. No, not one of them has given this guy a response, and he's sent it to everyone I can think of. You know, even Pacifica Radio, that's supposed to be this alternative news. Nope, they won't touch it. This understand that CAFRs are not addressed at all in any type of public forum, and that's why this is how I know if a radio show is legitimate or essentially Operation Mockingbird. Because if you talk about this on your airtime, you either you have to be for real, because this is the real stuff. This is the stuff that just isn't talked about. So I thank you.
If I was an excellent producer, I would have already had you on my broadcast on Oracle Broadcasting, and maybe we're going to have to get a little bit tighter together so I can have you on. Not that it makes me legitimate because of what you said, but I have been interested to have you on because I think you have, again, I'll tell you again, you were able to, and a lot of people are telling me this, and like I said, William Roberts on as a colleague host, he said the same thing the other day on his broadcast. He tells about your video all the time. You were able to clearly explain this. So my hat's off to you for doing that. And I think when people start appreciating what you've exposed and let them get into that, this is going to be immense. And I we'll have to get together and I'll get you on my broadcast and we'll talk more about
that. Absolutely. I'll even see if I can get Walter on there with me and we can do a back and forth.
Well,
it'll
give the information to people that we need to do that. But I'll finally get around to get on contact you. Thank you very much. Thank
All
you, Karen.
Right. Sounds good. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, that would be really wonderful. So we'll hook you up again coming up in April. And also, Clint, if you can get him to join us in April, that would be good too, because we are real radio, just real people volunteering our time and our energy and all of our effort to try and awaken the rest of the people who need to wake up so that we can do something about this mess. All right. Folks, we are going to be going for a break right now. Stay tuned. We're going to have Roslyn Peterson up next. She will be talking to us about what she knows about the nuclear reactor in Japan. We'll be right back on United We Strike.